Okay, let's get started. Hello, everybody. The goal today, hopefully, we'll tackle the whole Perek Yutes. The Perek is a little bit long, but I think we'll be able to pull it off, so we can keep on schedule, hoping to finish the Sefer Ritz Hashem before the Kollel goes on break. I think we're in good shape. We last left off last week was with the true end of the rebellion of Avshalom. Now this week the question is going to be: is it really the end of the rebellion of Avshalom? The line always is: you can win the war, but can you win the peace? And Perek Yutes, we're going to see the real challenge, and it could be open question. Could be the answer is there are no easy answers, but we'll see the challenge David HaMelech is going to deal with as he moves on from the civil war against Avshalom, both personally and politically. And we'll see that. Kind of fascinatingly, after this far into Sefer Shmuel and everything that David has done, in this week we will see what Chazal see as David's biggest mistake, having nothing to do with Uriah, having nothing to do with Bathsheba, nothing to do with any of the challenges he had in the time of Shaul and with Nov. It's going to be this week. So let's open up the source sheet and let's get started, right? So I think we focused on last week, I believe, was David's failure, the challenge of the personal and the political, where the two leaders that B'nai Yisrael really have at the moment, there's David and Yoav, and we might think back to the beautiful the description that the Gemara had of how their partnership worked when times were good, coming off of the pasuk, I think, in Parak Zayin of Shmuel Beis, where the Navi describes David as the king, and he's the one who is Oseh Tzedek U'Mishpat, while Yoav is in charge of the army, and we had David working on the home front, keeping up the Torah values, and we had Yoav working in the national security arena, and the two of them being mutually reinforcing. So last week that really broke down because basically David abandoned his job as the national leader and he just became the personal father. And we saw the parallels that the Navi drew between David, who's waiting at the gate for news, but he's waiting for the wrong news, just like Eli, the Kohen Gadol, at the beginning of the Sefer, while Yoav was the one who seemed to basically take natural responsibility in terms of killing Avshalom, be the consequences what they may be. So, for just to orient ourselves before we begin the parak, because we're going to see the basic issue that we're going to have is all of the different factions that we have among B'nai Yisrael. And the easiest way to do it is to just represent the map that we saw last week. So we have Yehuda in the south, as we know, but the map here calls Yisrael in the north, but really dominated by Shevet Yosef, the lands of Menashe, and especially Ephraim. So those are two major factions to consider: Yehuda in the south, Yosef in the north. Smack in the middle, we have the land of Binyamin, which was, of course, the family of Shaul, who, even though he is no longer in power, they still are a third political faction to consider in the issue over here. And then the fourth faction is the Jews on the other side of the Jordan River, the Jews living on the Eber HaYarden. And what really emerged in Perek Yudches, in the moment of the battle between David and Avshalom, was an impressive political accomplishment by David. It really showed what he, everything he did as king did pay off in the sense. The land on the other side of the Jordan River had once been very loyal to Shaul. In the beginning of Shmuel Beis, this city, Machanaim, was the capital city of Ish-bosheth, the son of Shaul, which made sense because the Navi told us it only spent one pasuk on it, but the Navi did tell us that Shaul spent a lot of time fighting against B'nai Yisrael's enemies on the other side of the Jordan River, Ammon and Moab and Edom. But David manages to completely align the group of B'nai Yisrael on the other side of the Jordan River with himself. And we argued it was because they showed loyalty to David. David spent so much time fighting against Ammon and Moab and Edom and Aram. And gratitude is one thing that the Jews can have sometimes. And the Jews on the other side of the Jordan River, between their experience, between what David did for them and their relative distance from Avshalom and his charismatic magnetic power, they remained loyal to David. So those are the four groups to consider: Yehuda, Binyamin, Yisrael, and the other side of the Jordan River. And at the end of the battle, David really only has clear loyalty from this group, right? He's beaten the larger group in battle of these three, the seeming coalition of these three members. But now we need to see how is he going to be able to win the peace and actually bring them all over onto his side. That's going to be the challenge, just, you know, from looking at the map. Okay, so now we pick up with Perek. And we have, you know, one of the most classic moments probably in all of Tanakh, when David has been told of the death of Avshalom, and we have that heart-rendering cry, that Yergaz HaMelech Layal Aliyas HaShar Vayef, right? He goes up to the top of the gate at the entrance to the city, right? V'komar Belechto, and as he's frantically walking back and forth on top of the gate, seemingly in full view of everybody, B'ni Avshalom, B'ni Avshalom, Mi Itin Musin Itachtach Avshalom, B'ni. And all he can say is, my son Avshalom. I think that this is the first time that David is actually called Avshalom, B'ni. You know, maybe a little bit of an Achrimos Kedoshim situation over here. But David is totally broken, right? The Cushi who brought him the news at the end of the previous parak thought he was giving David good news. Yoav knew better. He knew it was bad news, but he didn't realize it was going to be this bad. I mean, David just breaks down. Yoav is told about this. Remember, I think we I forget who pointed this out. Maybe it may have been Rav Amnon Bazak, but I think maybe others as well, that throughout this whole parsha, the Navi does not refer to David as David. It consistently refers to him as the Melech, underscoring the gap over here. This is not supposed to be a personal moment. David has a personal status, but he also has a national status. And here is the ultimate moment where the two of them are in tension. And David's person indulging, again, totally understandably, but at the end of the day, prioritizing his personal emotions is wreaking havoc on the national level. As the Navi says, what happened? Everyone turned, victory has been turned into mourning. Everyone's been told, Kinatzav Hamelach Albino, Vezganev Ha'am Bayomahula Vo Ha'ir. Everyone is sneaking into the city. We should imagine the image for a second. Everyone is coming back to Machanayim. They all have to go in the gate. Right? So all the soldiers are coming back from the battle and they're under the gate. And what do they see and hear literally directly above them as they enter the city is David Hamelach, you know, vocally crying and weeping for Avshalom. And so they're all trying to, like, you know, sneak back into the city, hoping that David doesn't notice any of them as they come back in. The analogy to a ganov who tries to sneak in to steal. Kasher yisganiv, ha'am nichlamim b'nusam b'melchama. You know, people run away from a battle, and then they try to, like, slip into the town, you know, so that people don't notice them. You know, hey, why are you deserting the army? Why? City. So that's happening here as well, except it's after a victory. And the Navi continues to demonstrate, David kept on going. La'aras panav, he's covering his face. Ve'ezak amalach kol gadol. So everyone can hear. Everyone can hear what David is up to. Okay. And Yoav is horrified. And we'll look at his speech in a second. Before we look at the speech that Yoav had in a second, which is kind of straight up astonishing, we should look at a couple of the things that the Mefarshim point out about this. So the Malbim has an interesting insight, right? The Navi said, that David said, "Mi yutin musi ani tachtacha." And as we're trying to understand why David is so broken, so obviously part of it is just a father for his child. Although we wonder, because David did not really show particular closeness to Avshalom until the moment when Avshalom was about to die. Which itself is its own tragedy, if we think about it. But the Malbim points out, we have to realize that David knows full well there's something else happening over here. And this is something that nobody else knows. Hold on a second.
Rabbi Goldstein, I don't know if anyone else had this problem, but I just lost you from after you said the Balbim, what he started to say about that he knows something else, that David knows something else is going.
I also
now I'm back. That was weird. First it said my internet was unstable, and then it said, and then I got frozen out, and then I came back, but I wasn't the host. But now I'm the host again. So that was pretty weird. Okay, I apologize, but now we're back. It says it's a fully functional network connection. Okay. Sorry. Okay. So we last left off. We were talking about that David. We're beginning with the Malbim, right? We're saying that David knows something else that nobody else knows about, right? Which is that David knows that he is. This is also happening as a punishment for him, right? So the Malbim explains that is why the Navi said. That's why David said, "Mi yitein musi ani tachtecha." Because David knows this isn't just what's happening to Avshalom. He knows that part of this is a punishment for his own sin. So there are two pieces that are really roiling David. There's the emotion of the loss of a son. And there's also the unbelievable emotion of regret, knowing that some of this is coming because of his as a consequence of his own actions. So it all comes together, and it's like a real, almost impossible to imagine, you know, like cyclone of pain that's hitting David in this moment. An important point that the Malbim is making over here. Now, when the Malbim has another important point, a couple of psukim later, regarding the reaction that David has, now that Yoav has. Right. So if you look back for a sec, what did the Navi say? The Navi said, "Ve'yugad le'Yoav hinei hamalach bochev v'yis abel alav shalom." The king is crying and the king is mourning. So the Malbim points out that to some degree, Yoav anticipated this in a way that no one else did, right? If we think back to the previous parak, so the soldiers wanted to give David the news. Ahimaatz wants to give David the news. The Cushi wants to give David the news. They're all assuming David's going to be happy and rejoice. The kingdom has been saved. The nation has been saved. Avshalom has been killed. Yoav knows David better than anyone. He knows that's not going to be David's reaction. He knows that David's reaction is going to be sadness for his son. And therefore, he doesn't want Achimaatz to be the one to give the news. The Malbim argues, though, that even Yoav did not anticipate that David would respond to such a degree. He says that Yoav was horrified by the line Shemis Abel al Avshalom. The Malbim explains that Yoav expected David personally to be sad. Now, you want to mourn? You want to have your own emotions on the inside? You can totally do that. You know, being the king does not mean you have to turn into a robot. You're allowed to have your emotions. However, what being king does not allow you to do is having the luxury of displaying the emotions. And so Yoav is horrified by the fact that David is mourning. He knew that David was going to be sad, which no one else did, but he expected him to not display that externally. Right? He said, it was appropriate what happened. Haruge Bezdin Emes Abmalein. There's a halacha. If somebody is executed by the Bezdin, the relatives are not supposed to sit Shiva. The halacha is they have the status of Onin. I forget the exact line in the Gemara, but there's an emotional response, which is why Aninus is still active. But Shiva doesn't apply. Avelus doesn't apply. So the Malbim really is taking that like in a halachic direction, which we can accept at the same time, have it in a political piece as well. David is not supposed to react this way. And it's going to be a disaster, right? He says the people are really shocked. The people expected this to be a celebration. What do the pasuk say? The Chua Bayoma Hula Eval. They thought today was going to be a day of tremendous victory. And all of a sudden it goes, Menakatza Lakatza. So Yoav thought that David was going to be on like the 50-yard line. He was going to be personally sad, but at least he'd hold it in check. The people expected David to openly celebrate. And everyone is horrified by the fact that David is openly crying. Now, before we get to Yoav's reaction, we also should point out that Dan Micker points this out, another modern Mepharshim do as well, that this description of David at the end really brings things full circle. but on a couple of different levels. The one that everybody points out is the fact that this line of Vayganev, this line of like stealing, was how Avshalom's rebellion began, right? With Avshalom stealing the hearts of the people. So they point out, okay, we had Avshalom stealing the hearts of the people, and now we have David's men coming, stealing their way back into Eretz Yisrael. I'm seeing my notes for a second. But it's more than it's more than that. It's really many, many lines bring this back. Avshalom had said, "Mi yisimini shaped ba'aretz." We have David saying, "Mi tain musi tachtacha." We have Avshalom meeting people at the gate, and we have David at the gate. Right. So there's a total flip. I'm not really sure. I think I may have had a thought at 2 in the morning of the night. Why? I'm not really sure what the deeper message is about the parallel between the beginning of the rebellion and its end. But the Navi very clearly is telling us that we should be thinking of those two together. This is like a package deal. Offhand, I'm not really sure why. Okay, so Yoav has found out what happened. Now Yoav's reaction, Yoav is horrified. And Yoav has an unbelievably sharp response. Yoav comes to the king. We have to read this inside. Leomer, Hovashta hayom es pnei kol avadecha. You've humiliated your servants. Hamalatim es nafshecha hayom. Right? Who saved your life today. So embarrassing anybody is terrible. The lack of gratitude for those who saved your life is particularly horrible. Not only that, everybody you're close to. And then Yoav has the central line. Did I freeze again? No? No, good. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Right? And this really sums up the difference between Yoav and David. The question is, when is Yoav right and when is Yoav wrong? But here's Yoav's philosophy in one passage. La'ava es sonecha v'lisno es la'ava sonecha v'lisno es avacha. Says Yoav to David, you are loving those who hate you and you are hating those who love you. Which, ad hayom hazeh, this is the classic question. You know, if you are trying to make peace, which this is going to be the challenge going forward. So you don't negotiate with friends, you negotiate with enemies, which is actually true because you negotiate with friends all the time. But Yoav is saying, lo zoa derech, lo zoa ir. You have the people on your side, the other people against you. Your job is to be loyal to those who you have, and your job is to fight those who are against you. Right? And that's always Yoav's MO. You see the enemy, fight the enemy. You have the friend, loyal to the friend. See what we will about Yoav, his loyalty to David runs through the entire time. There's not one moment in Sefer Shmuel where Yoav shows disloyalty to David. Insubordination to David he has all the time. That's because he thinks he knows what's better for David than David himself does, as often actually may be the case, like we had in the previous parable. But Yoav is loyal to his friends and he fiercely opposes his enemies. David is more inclined to Rachmanos, which means trying to bring the enemies on your side. And Yoav and David and Avishai and David will have fights like this. Should we kill Shaul? Should we fight against Shimi ben Gera? Should we kill Avner? Right? They've had those fights all the time. Sometimes, like in the case of Avner, David was correct and Yoav was wrong. That was a moment where bringing in Sonecha was the right move. You could turn those who hate you into your friends. That's what David was trying to do. However, in this moment, it seems like the Navi completely endorses Yoav's perspective. In this moment, Avshalom was someone who was totally irredeemable, as we saw. He was a Ben Sora Umora through and through. And all David is doing here by mourning over his dead enemy is alienating those who are with him. Right? So it's a line that beautifully sums up the general contrast in views between David and Yoav. But it's not like you read this one pasuk and this now gives you the political response to every question history. It always depends on the circumstance, on the situation, and sometimes the David approach is the better one, and sometimes the Yoav approach is the better one. But it's just such a beautifully clear view of his whole Ashkafas HaChaim, and Yoav continues, and it's unbelievable. I mean, he's yelling at David, on and on and on. Yadati hayom ki luv shalom chai kulon hayom meisim ki az yashar beinecha. If Avshalom lived, we would die. And he's not wrong. He's absolutely correct. He's able to have the clear-headed view of the situation, which David can't do. David the father cannot respond the way David the king has to respond. And Yoav is blasting him for that. And then the Pasuk Chas, maybe the most unbelievable one of them all. Atakum say, look at that. This is a general talking to his king. And he says, Belashon tzivui, get up and go out. You know, modern Hebrew, from what I understand, we don't like Lashon tzivui so much. It's a little bit too aggressive. Takum v'teitze, we would say. But no, Yoav, straight. Get up, get out, and speak. V'daber alei v'vadacha. Three commands and three words from Yoav. Speak to your servants. And then he swears, Ki v'ashem nishbati. I swear in Hashem's name, Ki incha yotzei milin ish al tacha alayla. If you don't go out, you will not have a single person with you by the end of the day. You're going to lose everybody. You need to realize this is a politically precarious situation. You cannot take for granted the friends that you have. If you don't go out, it'll be the worst thing that's ever happened to you. Just an all-around unbelievable three psukim from Yoav. Now, what's the response? And here is the greatest praise we have for David throughout the whole Sefer Shmuel. David, what's his MO? Does he make mistakes? Absolutely. But does he fix those mistakes every single time? Every single time. And we have something here you would never see. What king would ever respond in such a way where they're getting yelled at and screamed at and commanded by their insubordinate general who just killed his own child and is swearing in Hashem's name and screaming at him? And what does David do? He gets up and he does exactly what David says, what Yoav says. And that's David's MO. He takes the Musar. No matter how personally difficult and how personally challenging, when he gets the message to correct course, he'll go, of course. But when he gets the message to correct course, he does so. And it was amazing back when Nasan gave him the Musar. Okay, then it was a Navi. And it was astonishing. When in history would a king allow a Navi into the room and yell him and tear him up to shreds like that? At least that was a Navi. This, hey, it's not a Navi, it's a general. It's a general that David has had history with. And it's a general who killed his own son, who he is desperately mourning for. Doesn't matter. David takes the musar. He gets up. He goes to the gate. And everyone sees him. It's an unbelievable David moment. Okay. The Abarbanel has a great line right here. The Abarbanel says, he says, look, and this is really a Yoav worldview. He says, you know, in war, Yoav is a general. He says, in war, one group's going to win, one group is going to lose. And David, you can want to be on everyone's side. You can want rachamim, you can want mercy. But at the end of the day, we found ourselves in a situation of war. You need to accept that. They're going to be winners. They're going to be losers. And if you don't accept that, you'll end up losing. It's just another great Yoav line. Okay. So now, Ad Kan, the piece of David's personal struggle, which really ends in a classic David way, right? Beginning with the mistake, but then ending with the tikkun, which David does successfully. The rest of the parak deals with the political aftermath. What's going to happen? So pasuk yod yud aleph, we see already this is beginning. Everyone out there is disgusting, and they begin to realize that they made a mistake. They say, look, David saved us. He saved us from the plishtim. He was chased away by Avshalom, and now Avshalom is dead. Adds the Malbim, because the Pasuk Yud is a little bit strange. It says, David saved us from our enemies, he saved us from the Plishtim, and he ran away from Avshalom. So what does it mean he ran from Avshalom? So the Malbim explains that it's all part of the same thing. It's our ingratitude. He did so much for us, and yet, what did he get? He got Teshlumei Ratachas Tov. Now, he saves everything, and yet he ran. It's like a statement of astonishment. We were under the spell. We're under the spell of Avshalom. Look at the king we had and everything he did for us. He ran away from Avshalom. What's interesting about this point the Malbim is making, this insight that B'nai Yisrael, it's like they've had the spell lifted from their eyes and they're realizing how unfair the treatment of David was, is that the Malbim had suggested earlier, remember, that this was exactly Tziva's conspiracy. We're going to get back in this parak with Tziva and Mephibosheth, the son of Yehonasan. And the way the Malbim explained Tziva's plan was when he was saying what Mephibosheth was allegedly plotting was that David will run away, Avshalom will kill him. In the moment, the people will upset Avshalom. Once all the hoopla dies down, they'll realize that they did something terrible. How on earth could we have allowed a son to rebel and murder his father? The people would turn on Avshalom. And who'd be left? Who'd be left standing would be Mephibosheth, having a house of Shaul. Wiped the house of Shaul by default because the house of David has just been wiped out. And we should just note that the Malbim, a couple of prakim later, the way he's reading what Bnei Yisrael are reacting now, lines up with this exactly. The political vision that Siva conjured up about Mephibosheth's view is not crazy, because that's actually exactly how the people are responding now. Once Avshalom, after the heat of the moment, the power of Avshalom's charisma loses force, as the Yetzer Hara always does, right? Whenever the Yetzer Hara is incredibly powerful in the moment, but afterwards, as we calm down, we look backwards, we wonder what on earth we found appealing about this. Okay, and that's going to be a little bit important when Mephibosheth comes back a little bit later on. So now, do you need this room? Okay. Okay, great, thank you. All right, see, I thought being out of the band room was going to be easier, but I guess not. Okay, so now let's go through the rest of the paragraph and go through this more quickly, the last 20 psukim or so. So David sends men to Yehuda. Right, now we have to really remember that there are the different factions that were in Avshalom's coalition. When we set up Avshalom's coalition, we said that it made sense that Avshalom's coalition may not last so long. Right? Avshalom played off on Yehuda's grievances against the other 11 Shvatim. He played off on the other Shvatim's grievances against Yehuda. He got everyone to be together. So now David has to actually pick up the pieces. So first, David sends a message to the elders of Yehuda saying, why do you come to me? So we see from here that Yehuda really had turned down David. Then in Pasuk Yudalid, David does something astonishing. And now we already have to ask, is what he's doing correct or incorrect? He sends a message to Amasa. Amasa is David's nephew. He's Avshalom and Yoav's cousin. And Amasa had betrayed David to become the general of Avshalom's army. Right? The Navi had said that Avshalom replaced the title general of Israel that had been Yoav's title, and Avshalom gave it to Amasa. Now, normally, what happens to the general of the defeated rebellious army? He should be executed. But instead of executing Amasa, David sends him an astonishing message. He says, "Hello, Atzmiv Sariata, you're my flesh and blood," which is definitely true. They're both from the same Sheva, and he is his nephew. Koya Sali Alkim Kol Yosef, Im Lo Sar Tzavatiyel, Lefanai Kol Him Tachas Yo. Whoa. Not only are you not going to die, but you're going to replace Yoav as the general of all of Bnei Yisrael. Now, why does David want to do this? So there are two main approaches in the Mepharshim. One, positive, maybe, and one is negative. But it's astonishing what David does in it. So the Ralbag, this is a little better. The Ralbag's first suggestion is that David is doing this. This is a political coup. If you want to bring Yehuda back on your side, so you do that with mercy. And instead of executing one of the heads of the rebellion from your Shevet, you co-opt him and bring him back into the government. That is the Rabag's first suggestion. So it seems like David did this so that, he wants to get Amasa on his side, and that he'll be able to, that's going to be a difference maker. Will Yehuda follow David, or will Yehuda maintain its opposition to David? If I can co-opt Amasa, the general from our Shevet, then I can maybe co-opt the rest of the Shevet as well. That seems to be the Rabag's preferred explanation. The Rabag has an alternative explanation. The first one who made this one was the Radak. And the Radak is more impressed by the fact that David is firing Yoav. Why is that? Says the Radak. Ki sana David is Yoav al sharagas av shalom. Ratza lahasirosh lo yesarba sartzvao. So the Radak suggests that David is once again lapsing into the personal emotion versus the national responsibility. Yeah, it is crazy. You can't just forgive the general of the opposing rebellion. What's going to happen if you're soft to your enemies? You're going to get more enemies. But David hates Yoav. Why? Because Yoav murdered Avshalom. So in the moment, he accepted his muster, but now he is not going to be the head of the army anymore. Instead, it's going to be Amasa. Rabag even suggests that one reason why David may have been upset, I'm not sure this really fits with the Pshat and the Psukim, but the Rabag just suggested, is he says, maybe part of what got David angry was Yoav's harsh words to him. Not really sure. I mean, it sounded more from the Psukim that David accepted the Musa. But either way, we see this tension. Now, Barbanel suggests that both are correct. Both are correct. No problem. Right? On one hand, we have David thinking with his more merciful strategic policy, co-opt your enemies by making them your friends. And at the same time, it doesn't hurt that this fills a personal desire because he gets to take revenge on the person who killed his son. Right? But now, it's an open question. Is this the correct move or not? And we'll get to the next, when I get to the next parak and the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri, and we consider what's happening with Amasa, we need to wonder, was David's mercy towards Amasa, did that help bring Yehuda back onto his side? Or did that only encourage further rebellion? You know, is this cold political analysis or is this rash personal decision-making? Very hard to tell all around. And very hard to tell what the correct response should have been. Right? The Yoav approach versus, from the beginning of the parak, versus the David approach. We also should note, by the way, that this confirms something to us from a couple of prakim ago, when Achitofel committed suicide because he thought he had no hope. David's going to win, and so, better kill myself than be killed as a traitor. Well, we can imagine, just if, as a Kal Vachomer even, if David would forgive, and not only forgive, but even promote the general of the army that's fighting against him to be the general of his army, very yitachin. But David didn't want to kill Avshalom. He does not kill Amasa. He probably would have had mercy on Achitofel as well, right? So it just goes to show another piece of the kind of the perverted intelligence of Achitofel. He was so smart he could see the future, except he wasn't actually able to. So then we have three other people actually going to come forward. Sheva ben Bichri. No, it's not Sheva ben Bichri. Shimi ben Geira. Oh, there's two of them together. So Shimi ben Geira comes back, right? So Shimi ben Geira is in a bit of an awkward situation because last time he saw David, he thought David was going to be deposed as king and he was throwing rocks at him and cursing him out. So now Shimi's in a little bit of trouble. Whoops. So what does he do? He does two things. Number one, he runs proactively to be at the very head of the line, coming to welcome David, greet David, and show that he's totally remorseful and that he now has loyalty to David. And he also has a political calculation. Who does he bring along? The Navi says he brings Elef Ish Imomi Binyamin. He brings 1,000 people from Shevet Binyamin. The Navi said that Shimon Gera was from the house of Shaul. He clearly is an important political person. And the message that Shimi wants to give to David is that just like Amasa was the kingmaker for Shevet Yehuda, I am the kingmaker for Shevet Binyamin. So it pays for you to have mercy on me because that is going to help the challenge of bringing Bnei Yisrael back together. And he brings along Tziva, who was the longtime major domo of the house of Shaul. So we have two very prominent Shaul personalities here, Shimi and Tziva. Tziva is now high on the hog because David had awarded all of Mephibosheth's property to Tziva. And so they come forward to David. Once again, he's begging for mercy. Now what happens? Now there's a great back and forth. So this is David. So Shimi wants mercy. So the first person, not even Binyamin, but the whole northern tribe. So I'm the first one. There's Yehuda, and then there's me. I'm the first one. And who speaks up? It's not Yoav, it's Avishai. But what's so great about this? So Avishai, right, yelled last time Shimi came along, Avishai was upset. Avishai wanted to cut off his head. So what does Avishai say? Hatacha zos liyimash Shimi ki kilelos Moshiach Hashem. So I understand. He cursed out Hashem's anointed. So shouldn't we kill him? So David says, you b'nei tzru, you drive me nuts. You and your brother drive me nuts. No one's going to die today. Just like when Shaul won his battle against Amon when he first became king. He said, it was a great victory today for B'nai Yisrael. We're not going to kill the people who are disrespectful to me. David says the same thing. On a national day like today, we're not going to kill anybody. What's great about Avishai, though, and people point this out, is that Avishai is turning David's old argument on him. Right? The first time we ever saw Avishai, this is now the third time that Avishai wants to kill somebody, and David says don't. The first time was when they were next to David, to Shaul, when Shaul and his whole camp were asleep in Parachav Vav. So Avishai said, let me kill him. And David said twice to Avishai, you do not have enough respect for the Mashiach Hashem. You do not have enough respect for the office, the institution, the concept of somebody who Hashem himself anointed to be the king of Bnei Yisrael. I don't care what he's done to me. He may have a halacha of Rodif, but the halacha in Shulchan Aruch of Rodif applies to a regular person. When you have somebody who is Hashem's anointed, you need to treat that person with much more respect. So what happens now? Avishai turns on the argument. He says, David, what about the Mashiach Hashem? You're the Mashiach Hashem now. So where's your respect? You were so hyper-respectful to Mashiach Hashem back in Shulah Perek Chavav. Now turn it around. You are the Mashiach Hashem, and therefore the person who disrespected you should be killed. You know, you can imagine Avishai is going nuts. And David says, no, we're not going to do it. Once again, we need to ask. Here it seems like a clearer cut case that David's mercy is the more appropriate approach. But at every single moment with Amasa, we have Yoav who wants him dead, as we'll see, he's going to kill him in the next parak, versus David who says, have mercy. Shimi, we have Avishai who wants him dead, and David says mercy. One way to read the two is that Yoav was correct about Amasa, just like he was right about Avshalom, while David was right about Shimi. We could read it that David was right about Shimi, Yoav was right about Avshalom, and Shimi somewhere in the middle. This classic question of Rachamim versus Din, which one to show, very, very hard to pin down, and that is the struggle that's happening in the whole entire parak. Okay. So now, though, we have the moment. A question?
What about the fact that Mordechai descended from Shimi?
Yeah, so Chazal definitely give David credit for this one. They say that by saving Shimi, right, that Mordechai is descended from Shimi. So they definitely give David credit for the decision over here. So it works totally well. It's a little bit unclear. Is Mordechai descended from Shimi? Is Mordechai descended from Shaul, which other midrashim say? Very possible the answer is from both. Either way, right, we're saying on one hand, so we have the Shimi case where Rachamim seems like it's being endorsed by the Navi. We have Avshalom where Din was endorsed by the Navi, and Avshalom is a great case. So far, not so clear, and we'll see it's going to be less clear next week. Okay, now though, we have the total shock. So now Mephibosheth comes to David. He comes to Yerushalayim, and we have Mephibosheth, the crippled son of Yehonasan, who was betrayed by a servant Siva, and David had given all of his property to Siva. So David says to him, "Lama lalachti mi Mephibosheth?" And Mephibosheth says, "My servant tricked me. I said, get my donkey ready so I can go to the king, but I'm lame, I can't walk. V'yargel ba'avdecha," right? He slandered me. "V'adini amalach amalach halakim, asei tov beinach." So Mephibosheth, he's ready to accept the judgment. He says, look, I don't care. I'm not in it for the money. But you should just know, on a personal level, it matters for me to know that you should know that I was lied to. By rights, David had the right to kill everybody from Beis Shaul. And yet, Atasha says, so unbelievable tzidkus that we see from Mephibosheth here. Now, he's been slandered. All of his money has been taken away because his servant lied to David and claimed that he had turned against him. And David had wrongly ruled against him. You know, the beginning of Avshalom's rebellion, Avshalom took advantage of the anger that everybody had, because everyone thinks that they're right and you have a court case, even if they're wrong. Avshalom harnessed that anger in order to launch rebellion. Here we have Mephibosheth, who actually has been completely falsely ruined in a court case, and yet far from having resentment of David, he comes to me and he just says, I want you to know that personally, you should know that I never had any evil thoughts against you. I only have gratitude for what you've done for me, and I have no claim on you. And it's like just it's jaw-dropping tzidkus from Mephibosheth. And then we have David's really heartbreaking response. So what does David do? David splits the estate. And if Yehoshua son of the answer, he said what he meant. He could take everything. All I care is that you're safe. I don't care about the money. So Chazal here, I have just, it's an unbelievable line. We'll see, it really fits into the pshat of the psukim. What does Chazal say? When David said, you split the field, you split the field, they're going to split the king. Right? And then Rabbi Yehuda continues, lo kibel David lashon hara, lo nechlem achlus with David, lo yisal vodazara, lo galin meratzenu. Yeravam, everything, the whole disaster that comes from Sefer Malachim, all comes from this moment. Now, it's astonishing about this Gemara right here, is that it's nun vav mebeis. It's after the Gemara gives the whole elaborate defense and explanation. Kol sha'omer David chata inu ela toa. We could explain Bathsheba. We could explain Uriah. It is this moment right here of splitting the field that Chazal see as David's one unforgivable sin. Right? Whoever would say, now anybody who says that Chazal whitewashed David HaMelech have to deal with this Gemara right over here. But they see this as total disaster. Now it fits nicely into the pshat of the psukim, because what we're going to have immediately after this parak is going to be the rebellion of Sheva ben Bechri, the first split between the Shevet Yehuda and the Shevatim of Yisrael. Sheva ben Bechri is going to have the exact cry of rebellion, basically word for word, that Yeravam is going to have in Sefer Malachim. We'll get to it next week. So Chazal see here the seeds planted of the future splitting of the kingdom. David doesn't lose his kingdom for Uriah. He doesn't lose his kingdom for Bathsheba. He loses his kingdom here. And I think one major reason why is the difference between what happens here with Mephibosheth and any mistake David has made previously is that here David has a second chance. David listened to the Lashon Hara of Tziva back in Perek Tes Zayin. And he gave Tziva the whole field. He never should have done that. He should have properly investigated. He gave in the emotions of the moment. But now is the moment where things have calmed down. The rebellion is over. He can launch an investigation. He has a second chance. He has the other person facing him. And for the first and only time, instead of taking advantage of the second chance, change course, David just says, split the field. He goes with Pshara instead of Din. And this is the real, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about the Botzei Berech Nietz Hashem, the kind of eyes, which is just an abasement of justice. And that is what we have from David over here. And the real horror of it is that David had Rachamim on Avshalom, and he had Rachamim on Amasa and Rachamim on Shimei ben Gera. He doesn't have Rachamim on Mephibosheth, the son of Yonasan, and Chazal just don't stand for it. There's no defense that Chazal meant what happens over here. Okay, so we should just finish at least the bulk of the parak. So the Navi just has a number of psukim about this Barzilai HaGiladi. This old man Barzilai, who David wants to give gratitude to. And he wants him to live in his palace. And Barzilai says, come on, I'm 80 years old. I just want to retire. And so David instead says, okay, your son is going to come live in my palace. It's a whole long, beautiful discussion of Bakara Sato. And I think it's a nice closing point for Parak. You know, on one hand, you have David, the real complication. You want to win the peace, what do you do with your enemies? And here Yoav and Abishai have one approach and David has another approach, and we're trying to weigh it out. Right? And it may depend on the circumstance, and it's very, very hard to figure out what to do. But on the question of what to do with your friends, so here, I mean, David blows it with Mephibosheth, because David makes a terrible mistake, but when David recognizes someone has done good for him, so here we have the midah of Hakar Sato, we have the midah of Chesed, the midah of Rus, you know, the Besor of David's family, where he just has unlimited recognition of the good that people have done for him. and he responds in kind, right? So, you know, the hard questions are the hard questions, but you can only succeed with, we can only get to the hard questions if we nail down the proper response to the easier ones. And that is something David is able to do with how he, with his response. In this moment, because the Navi says, David comes to Gilgal. It's one last, by the way, connection to Sefer Yehoshua. David comes back to Gilgal. His first stop when he comes over the Jordan River is the first stop that Yehoshua had when they crossed the Jordan River and set up the Mishkan. Barzillai's son, Kimhan, is with him. Yehuda's with him. But who do we have? We have Gam Chatzi Am Yisrael. Half of the nation. Half of the nation is with David. So all of the political decisions David has made, have they worked or have they not worked? Was David right how to go about it? Was Yoav right how to go about it? Well, hard to say. So right now, half of the people are with David, but half of the people are not. So next week, we'll go to Parak Chaf and the rebellion of Shammai ben Bechri, and we'll see the real conclusion of the rebellion of Avshalom. Okay, sorry for the technical difficulties. Next week, hopefully, the school, today was the last day of school here at the Yeshiva, so all the classrooms will be available next week, God willing. So I should get one that's closer to the Wi-Fi. So hopefully that'll be better.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot. Thank you. Bye. Bye.